Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bad End, episode 87. And holy shit, this podcast is rated mature, but also we got a whammy for you today. We got two big pieces of news. The first, well, this isn't really a piece of news, but I'm joined as always by my fabulous co-host, Josh Calixto. Look at him. You can't see it's him, but he's right there waving on the video call.
I'm putting my hands up and waving at the camera.
First big piece of news is that we played Cyberpunk 2077. We'll talk about it second half of this podcast. We got the pre-review. We got the copy early. We're going to talk about it. Second is that to join us for this episode, and he also played Cyberpunk 2077, is none other than writer and all-around awesome narrative designer Roy Graham of now fucking Wizards of the Coast. He's writing magic cards. So next time you read about like an elf stabbing someone in the narrative, that could be this guy on the podcast right now.
It probably won't be for another like 2 years. but yeah, I mean, like I'm working on things that probably won't see the light of day for like a while. But you can imagine.
Let's not let Roy downplay what's going on here. You know what I'm saying? Roy's been at this for a minute. He's done other work for large video game companies. Not sure if you're at liberty to say anything about that, but he has worked on narrative stuff for these big, you've probably played their games before type companies. So Roy, we're excited to have you on the show. What are you working on now?
Right now, I'm working on just a whole pile of stuff that I absolutely can't say on the internet. but I'm doing a bunch of writing for the upcoming Magic set. I just started pretty recently at Wizards of the Coast, so I'm sort of figuring out the ropes there. I'm also doing narrative design for Cantata, which... Do they know about that?
I think some of our listeners know about Cantata.
A game by the inimitable Kyle Kuchtel and a whole other gaggle of people now. Other than that, I'm just trying to survive the end of the world and, have a good time.
And using cyberpunk as a solve to do so, the way to get to that sense of inner peace. So I'm so stoked to talk about this game, folks. It's going to come in the second half. We got to leave it so that you listen to more of the episode. Common radio broadcasting technique. So we're going to do that later in the show. As you know, for the first half, we do talk about what video games we played this week. Sorry, I don't know why I'm being so like radio right now. It's because I've been doing like voiceover stuff and I'm just like, and today we're very excited to talk about the games we played this week. Did anybody play anything interesting? Is anything actually out right now that's like fun or good?
I played something I'm so excited to talk about, but I want to leave space for Roy Graham to talk about anything that he's been playing recently.
I've been playing a lot of Hades, like everybody. Yeah. I'm sure you guys have talked about that. We don't need to beat that old drum. the League of Legends preseason patch just hits and they've changed like everything. There are all new items, which is always fun because when you have a game that's where being good at it is basically about the level of knowledge you have, it's super fun to have just a whole swath of knowledge completely taken away from you and destroyed. And it really, you get a lot out of playing the game.
Right before my eyes. Just there goes all my time.
Ah, cool. That's just useless space in my brain now. I will always remember what Runic Bulwark did 4 years ago in League of Legends and cannot recall where Tunisia is on a map or anything, you know, remotely.
That's like
useful.
When people got mad in like a... In CSGO, they changed the spread of like the AK or something, and people were on forums being like, I perfected the AK spread for 6 years and you changed it.
I practiced like, 2 hours they knew, a day.
They knew how to like compensate for the AK spread such that it would like always sort of hit in the roughly the middle spot. And they're like, 6 years of my life, I practiced this. You changed it.
Yeah.
Or I guess it was like 1.6. Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I think maybe Source changed it and go. I don't know. Gamers were mad is the takeaway here.
As we so often are.
Are gamers mad about the new League stuff?
Oh, you're furious. Obviously. But other than that, I actually picked up the Master Chief Collection, which has been a fun little nostalgic blast from the past.
What do you do in the Master Chief Collection?
You collect small Master Chief statues.
Anything surprising you about, you know, revisiting these old games?
So I loved Halo growing up. I was like a Halo kid for sure.
It's actually really surprising. I would not have picked you as a Halo dude.
Actually?
Yeah, no, I would. I was like, I'm like, oh, he played Total War and like Mountain Blade and like StarCraft. Yeah. It was not Halo, was a Halo guy. And Roy did not seem like.
Loved
yeah,
it.
All right.
A lot of people played those games and Halo, though.
Yeah. Halo was like a common experience. If you were like a boy in like 2003, you fucking played Halo.
Talk about hitting the sticks. I remember like there was one guy in like my high school, or I guess it was like middle school at the time that like hit 40, and everyone was like, yo, that dude's a 40 in Halo. And everyone was like, and it was like, if you got to play with him, like after school, you were like hot shit. Cause he didn't want to get his like level down or whatever.
Also, this was that like weird period where, I mean, Halo was directly preceded by that weird period where RTSs were like the cool genre, you know, like StarCraft was such a huge thing, which looking at it now, it's like, how did that ever become the thing? Like country rock, like the Wallflowers and fucking Matchbox 20, like get that big
the talking
on
heads.
The radio. You, how did Rob Thomas and Santana have a fucking number one, one of the greatest selling records of all time? And then like I saw those freaking pictures of the San Antonio Spurs playing like a LAN of StarCraft on a plane in like 1997 or some shit. Have you seen that? It's such a trip, dude. They're just on like little they're on like IBM laptops playing StarCraft next to each other in like pajamas. It's the freaking San Antonio Spurs, Tim Duncan.
That rules. I love that.
Teams that frag together stay together.
What happened to gaming?
What, you know, like happened to it back in the
now
day?
It's just Drake.
Let's just tackle
and
that
shit.
Right now.
Dude, Travis Scott's like, oh, you play Fortnite? But like at that time it was like, you know, Tim Duncan going, you play StarCraft? How far we've fallen.
Yeah. You got AOC anyway, playing Among Us.
It started with Halo.
it all started with Halo.
What's the dude's name? Wendell? Fatality?
I think his name is original. Master Chief.
Oh, Matt, the Master John. Chief, Wendell. Fatality.
John Master Chief. 117. No, I think the thing I was actually this won't surprise you, Kyle. I liked Halo for the story.
For the story,
I actually for a long time I held the strong opinion that the Halo
Lore
series
God.
Was a pretty wonderful piece of video game writing, and I don't know if it's. I think the thing which I ascribed it, like the thing which I gave it credit for was taking this kind of morally complicated situation, like the Spartans are kidnapped children that are like trained to be killing machines, and the question is like, is, you know, is it worth it to do this like objectively evil thing in exchange for, you know, the chance of saving humanity from this alien menace, this like total war idea. But I think going back to it, the games are not actually interested, at least the like older games are really not interested in that question. The older games are like, hell yeah, fucking space fascism, here we go, shoot those aliens in the face, how fucking sick is it that you're a super soldier?
Well, are you familiar with the term ludonarrative dissonance? Because I think you just really hit
it. Yeah, I think I read an essay about that fucking 16 years ago.
Actually, you were just telling us, so Roy, if he sounds bad, it's because he's not a professional podcaster like the bad end co-hosts are, and we forgive him for that. But the benefit right now is that he's actually recording off his iPhone, but because he's a writer is a giant stack of books, and he was starting to read off some of them. What are you stacked on right now?
Right now, I'm stacked on The Ministry for the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson.
All right.
The Future Home of the Living God by Louise Erdrich. And then I also have my Magic the Gathering Commander deck sort of topping the pile, and supporting all of those is the an Xbox Series, Xbox One, Series X controller, Series S controller I got on Black Friday's special.
I like how you said it, the name of every Xbox in that one Xbox.
It's definitely one of them.
360
Xbox One X Series 360S.
I guess my question, though, besides wanting you to talk about your crazy stack of books, is like, how do you feel about the story now that you are a more well-read person whose like job is ostensibly like writing sci-fi stuff? Do you feel like it is sort of as interesting, or does it feel like derivative because you didn't read like the book it was clearly referencing at the time and that was your first?
I think it definitely introduced me to a lot of when did the first Halo come out? Like 2001, right?
I think it was
2001, because it was like a launch title for the Xbox. So I was probably playing that when I was like 8 years old. So it introduced me to a lot of like shit that I'm sure Heinlein and, you know, other like military sci-fi writers had already laid out and you know, thought through. One thing I'll say that really holds up, the ship names in Halo just fucking rule. They rip hard. They're all bangers. They're all so good. can I give you a couple
Just give us some.
Please, okay. Please do.
Forward Unto Dawn. In Amber Clad.
Ooh.
And then we get to the Covenant ships, Truth and Reconciliation.
Ooh, yeah, the Covenant the ships is where it's at.
I remember that mission name.
Yeah, Truth and Reconciliation is maybe my fave.
Yeah, they're all really good.
Okay, I got a question for you, Roy.
Hit me.
And not to turn this into an interview or something, but there's going to be a gap between the writing that like you would do in your free time and like, or the writing that like you would imagine, or like the writing that like you would envision for X, Y, or Z thing, and the thing that like ends up being put out there into the world. Because, you know, you're collaborating with a bunch of other people, you're putting together someone else's artistic vision, stuff like that. What are you trying to do? I mean, as someone who, you know, doesn't have like years and years and years of experience working in this environment, but is like still like breaking into it. What's your perspective on like having your say or like having your voice heard in that sphere, particularly when it comes to like games and
right.
even video games in some instances.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting subject. I'm sure that nothing I'm about to say is terribly original. I've found in my, you know, relatively limited experience that the bigger the game is, the more limited I have found in the sort of chances I can take and how sort of out there I can I'm allowed to go. A lot of my favorite fiction authors are like very weird, like Kelly Link and Jeff Vandermeer. So I like to. I guess if I was to sum up what I'm like trying to do for the game fiction I work on, it is pushing it closer to the weird. And
do you mean that with like the capital like W?
Yeah, I do.
Weird, like that, like the movie.
Yeah. Like the literary subculture or subgenre. And with like big games like League of Legends, for instance. I wrote like a short story for them, which I had fun writing, and I think it turned out really well. But as far as pushing things in the direction of weird, it was was harder to do because there were, you know, there was like a, it was an established character. There were going to be like 10 people looking at the story before it went to web. It had to go through like three different gauntlets of approval at various stages. Yeah, understandably, there's a lot, you know, riding on that IP. There's a lot that the players will sort of come to expect. On the other hand, working on Cantata, the game that I do narrative design with Kyle on, I have a lot more of sort of a blank check to push things into the direction of Strange, which partially because it's, you know, it's a smaller operation. The only people I really have to go through and get approval for is Kyle, and he's usually all in favor of me, you know, making our robots weird communist Catholics or whatever.
I feel like sometimes too with Cantata, I'll ask you stuff about the thing that I feel like, I don't know if it makes you feel like you're in charge, but I feel like I ask you some things about the script and I'm like, Roy, I don't know if we can do this. Like you wrote it, man. Like I really want to do this, but it's going to be hard. And it's like, I don't want to like toot Cantata's horn and your work on it, but like the shit's really good. And I feel like the philosophy on the game and the reason that you got involved with it before, like we even really properly working together, was that it was like, it sort of starts from that narrative place. Like initially it's like very much like we were coming up with the commanding officers in the game. Like my prompt to Rory was literally like, who lives in this universe? Like who's here? What do they do? And he just like brought some ideas and we were like, yeah, let's do it. And I think that like, I haven't worked on a big games team, so I'm interested in sort of the stuff where you feel more constricted. Like, what is that? Is it because you're not early enough in this stuff? Or like, what is that sort of first step? Because for me, it feels sort of natural to be like, oh, well, like the narrative is sort of the God that presides over the whole project and everything should feed that. But I don't know if like, I don't know what it feels like to work on a big project. And I know for some stuff you worked sort of early on it. So it's not like you've not been there early on, but like what is sort of, you know, when they look to narrative, how does it sort of, how do they see it fitting into the game?
Yeah, it's probably a combination of what you're talking about. To use Riot again as an example, I wrote a story about Tryndamere, who is like a character that I'm pretty sure has been in the game since 2009. Like he was one of the characters that launched with League of Legends. And at the time he was named after the video game screen name of someone who worked at Riot. His voice lines were like mostly just barbaric yops. And like the sort of collected lore about him was jokes about one hand being bigger than the other or one arm being bigger than the other because he had to lug his big sword around. Part of the narrative challenge of that was turning this character into someone that is more compelling. While also, you know, there were all these sort of narrative developments that other writers at Riot had put into place to make Tryndamere more interesting and to tie him into the like larger fiction of the League universe. I'm at a certain degree, you're writing a story that is your own, and you're trying to do something original and interesting. But it's like someone taking over a comic book character, you know, after many, many years is you have there's a real backlog of writing that's already been done on something. As opposed to Cantata, right, where everything is sort of, we're building the bridge like plank by plank as we go. So,
well, I think especially thinking of like the next step of that, where it's like, if you move off the project and another writer comes on, I can't necessarily offer them that same thing. It's like, oh, well, like there's already sort of an established universe here, at least at a baseline. Like for you, it was very much more or less a blank slate. They had some like rough ideas of stuff, but it wasn't like, you could sort of change a lot of stuff. There wasn't stuff that was already happening. Like, I especially think of something like Riot where like, you know, they've got all these champions and like all this art. And if you like change some key feature of one of their characters, you're all of a sudden like obviating, or I don't know if that's the right word, like obviating all of the previous work that they've done on these characters, this like art and all this stuff they paid for, and maybe even all these skins.
And not to mention, you're going to piss off a lot of fans also. I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah. As kind of an extended bit, I've been doing a Halo book club with some of my friends where we've been reading the... Well, we've only done one so far, but we read Halo Glasslands by Karen Travis. And it had its moments. It was it's fun to talk about. At one point, we went on the Amazon review page and the Goodreads page for it and discovered that this book, which had been hailed by some, I think mostly Brian David Gilbert, as being one of the best books in the Halo series, it had pissed off so many fans, specifically because the author had apparently totally changed the characterization of Dr. Catherine Halsey, who, for those of you out of the know, is the scientist responsible for creating the Spartan program. And this alone was, you know, there were comments about people being like, I've been reading these books since the fall of Reach. And to have this, so, you know, all of this characterization so callously thrown out was insulting to me, a grown man who only reads Halo novels, apparently.
Wait, how many Halo novels are there? How many are we talking?
A lot of Halo novels.
Really? Yeah. Like, I think there's like six. No, are there more than six?
Oh my God, yeah. Way more.
Are we talking like the like old school Star Wars extended universe levels?
I think there are upwards of 20 Halo novels.
Oh my God. That's a lot.
It's a lot. So I can understand, I guess.
Started with Halo.
Yeah. So apparently Karen Travis actually has a, I don't want to talk shit. I think she's probably the best writer to touch the Halo series in a really long time. But apparently this is a thing that someone who has done a lot of writing on established brands, she has in the past pissed off people, fans, for similar reasons. So it's
she's like the Armand White of like adaptations of games.
It's a minefield, man. It's really, it's hard. You got to be careful going into these, you know, hyper popular IPs and trying to do something interesting or original.
Wait, what's the best game book you've read? Halo: The Fall of Reach.
Can I give you?
And
can
why
I give
is Dante's it, Inferno?
Why is it The Elder Scrolls: The Infernal City?
Here, okay, I don't actually have. I don't have a. I have an aspirational answer. Is that enough?
As long as you give me a real one.
No, this is a real one. I just haven't read it. But it's
oh, you're just assuming it's,
well,
the best.
Well, so there's a horror author named Brian Evanson,
Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Who is very good and extremely weird, and like all of his stuff is really psychologically unsettling, and like, often it's really funny while also being like super fucked up. And I read like two collections of short stories he wrote during quarantine. I read a short novel he wrote. I've been on a kick, a Brian Evanson kick, for a while. And I just found out the other day that he wrote some licensed Dead Space novels at some point in his career.
Ooh.
So, I mean, if they're anything like his personal work, those novels probably rip.
Dude, there was like, I remember when Dead Space came out, they did like a huge transmedia campaign for that game. Like there were comic books, there was an animation, there were novels. And I want to say there was like, I think it's easy to forget how big of a release that thing was. Like there was like all, I think I've even got like a Dead Space comic somewhere in my apartment.
Yeah.
So that would
John,
track.
John Carpenter wanted to make a Dead Space movie.
Do it, John.
Come on. I would love that.
Other fun Halo fact that's not related to anything we've been talking about. Did you guys know that Niles Rogers is like the guy that does all the Halo music stuff?
Yeah.
Slash, do you know who
You've
Niles
mentioned
Rogers
it
is?
On this podcast.
I have. Fuck. It's such a good fact. The dude
it's
that's
a great
like
fact.
The
it's
session
a great
guitarist
fact.
Who's like like every time you hear that strumming guitar, and like especially in like Random Access Memories by Daft Punk, but like Niles Rogers, he's like, fuck yeah, I love Halo, I do all the music for that.
The music like, for Halo that, is really good. That's another part of the game that really holds up. The dude
produces for like Madonna. He's like, yeah, you know, my day job is producing Katy Perry's new album, and my side gig is working on Halo.
My passion is composing the music for 2001 first-person shooter Halo. But you
think of the fucking like the soundtrack to Halo. Think of like the da 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 da. It's like so Niles Rogers. It's just the same three guitars.
He did the Halo 2 theme with. There's a video out there of him with Steve Vai jamming, and they birthed the fucking Halo theme. Because there's also like the like intense guitar over it, like solos and shit, and Steve Vai is there just shredding. There's a video on the internet. Go Google that shit.
Go Google it. It exists.
Yeah.
Man. Can we ask, what's your like, before we move off the Roy train into maybe the Josh and Kyle train, while we're doing this interview, what's your like, excuse me, your like narrative designer take on Hades? Like, I think for us, it really hits. We're like, this is really cool. Are you, what's your like, how do you feel about it, especially thinking about it as like a, as a piece of writing, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it rules. Everything I could say about it would be stuff that's already been said, but I think I read an interview by the people, one of the designers of Hades, where they talked about how one of their goals was to make it so that players almost looked forward to dying, because it created, it offered new opportunities for to like move your narrative along, either the main narrative or your sort of personal relationships with these characters, which reminded me of playing BioWare games and like, you know, finishing a mission and running around the Normandy or whatever, trying to like see if I had new conversation options with any of the characters. And part of the reason that is successful is just because both obviously BioWare games and also Hades are really great examples of character writing. You're excited to die and get back to the House of the Dead or the House of Hades, whichever it's called, because you're excited to talk to all the fun characters they made.
And the writing itself, you also dig.
Yeah, it's great. It's punchy. It's fun. It's never too long.
Have you also read sort of last time we had a big discussion of Hades, we were sort of talking about the like some of the books recently that have done like more modern reinterpretations of like old school lit. Like, I mean, most recently there was the Beowulf book and then the new Odyssey translation a little bit. But I think also like Circe maybe was sort of like a modern, like, is that, are you familiar with that stuff? And do you feel like this is sort of in a lineage of that, or it's like talking to that, or like, I don't know, is it a greater movement in like historical fiction? I don't even know if you'd call that historical fiction.
I don't
fiction.
Think you'd call that historical fiction, but I don't know if I'd call it, I don't know if Hades represents like a thing that is happening right now. That sort of, what you're sort of talking about has been happening. There's been like a slow drip of that kind of stuff for a long time. Like you had the Penelope ad years before Circe. Josh, you want to say something?
I read that book.
yeah, you had the like Penelope ad, the Percy Jackson books, which I know are like YA. I used to work at a summer camp, and those kids absolutely fucking loved Percy Jackson like more than they love Harry Potter. So I think Greek myths are, and like mythology in general, is really compelling and interesting. Greek myths are, is one of the best known to us in like America. You get a lot from those stories getting retold over and over again, and they're so archetypal.
God of War.
Really put Yeah, thank you. Bringing Thor. It back to games.
God of War.
We've been not talking about video games for too long.
Age of Mythology.
You just want to yell God of War again?
God of War.
God of War.
God of War. My answer, Kyle, is Greek myths rule. They are evergreen and will always be interesting.
Lovely.
I agree.
Josh, what have you been playing?
I just built a new PC, so I'm kind of like reinstalling stuff. Yeah, it's... Oh my, this thing is on another level. It's like the kind of thing where it's like, I didn't realize a computer could do stuff like this. And also it's like too prepared for new stuff that's coming out. Like it's too good. Like it's better than the shit that's coming out. So like Cyberpunk runs just fine on this max settings. It runs / will run at max settings on this beast of a computer according to the specs that they sent.
And according to the gameplay that you did earlier.
And according to the gameplay that I personally did. But no, I'm playing Valorant in 1440p with like 500 frames.
You're getting nasty. Josh has been posting, join the Bad in Discord by contributing us on Patreon. Josh has been posting in Discord his like aimbot. What's it called?
Aim Lab.
His like Aim Lab fucking recordings. And Josh looks like a fucking murderous psychopath because he is just nailing these targets and it is insane. It's at a level now where like, I think what's crazy, I mean, I don't actually ever watch Aim Lab videos besides what Josh posts, but it's sort of hard to tell if you're watching like a professional esports player like perform, in part because there's so much shit going on where you don't see all the other things they could maybe be doing in the moment that they're like taking the shot. And the thing Josh is doing in Aim Lab is interesting because it's essentially target practice, but it's popping up really quickly. But like Josh is moving his mouse as like fast as my eyes can perceive a new object now.
Yeah, I should talk about Aim Lab a bit because on the last episode, I brought up like changing my desk setup and how that's allowed me to like reach new heights of gameplay. Right. And it is, I stick by that 100%. Like changing the way that your desk is set up, like having more space for your arm to move around, lowering your sensitivity. It's crazy how like the moment you do that kind of thing, you just feel it when you're playing a game. You're like, oh my God, I could do so much more. I can be so much more accurate. I can be so much faster. Something happens in your brain when you see something pop up on your screen in a first person shooter where you're like, okay, my hand wants to move like this in order to click on that object. You know, it's calculating the distance from where your crosshair currently is. It's calculating like how much your hand has to move to reach that point on your screen. It's translating your sensitivity into like the amount of pixels that it would take to drag your hand across your mouse pad in order to get your crosshairs on that object. That is an extremely complex equation that's going into your brain. But it's weird when you start doing this stuff, when you get in a comfortable position, when you're able to see the screen better, when your hand is in a more comfortable position with more space to move, it becomes a lot easier to translate like that initial instinct of like what my hand wants to do into like actually doing that thing. It's not going to be perfect, but over time, it's going to become more of a muscle memory. And what's crazy is that Aim Lab, it lets you just aim at shit constantly for like any given period of time, which is not something if you take any shooting game, you cannot do. Like that's not something that happens like in Counter-Strike or Valorant. You're like buying guns, walking around, like being all sneaky, peeking around corners. You're maybe aiming at shit like 3 or 4, maybe 5 solid minutes are spent like aiming at things out of the like half hour you spend on a game of Valorant. And Aim Lab, it's just, this is why people are getting better at these games, because you have these aim trainers that like let you just drill the skill of aiming at stuff, which to me is like it's a very athletic thing, which is why the more I think about esports and like calling people who play sport or like esports professionally as athletes, this shit is athletic. Like it's not the kind of like athletic where you sweat and you're like having to put your body on the line for this shit, unless you consider like carpal tunnel to be part of that. But like, this is, it's a physical activity in a lot of ways. It just requires a different skill set of like hand-eye coordination, drilling of these like really convoluted ways of moving your mouse about the screen. And if you watch pros, like when they're flicking around the screen and looking at stuff, you see their camera like moving because their hand is moving just furiously all over this mouse pad because they got these big screens. I'm emulating this on my own setup right now because it feels so nice to just like drag my hand around. But yeah, it's crazy. And to feel yourself getting better at that is such a crazy feeling. The first time I got that score, the score that I like sent was like 82,000, but like my max is in that is like 86 in grid shot, the drill in Aim Lab, which by the way is free on Steam. If anyone wants to try this out, go download Aim Lab on Steam.
I want to do it. Try just to grid see shot how I compare.
And see how you do. I guarantee you will say, how the fuck did Josh get 80? Because it seems impossible. But that's where I was like a couple months ago. And it's,
I used to be like you
before the Spartan program.
I haven't even been playing like that much, but like the rate at which I've gotten better is like, it felt impossible to me when I got that run that I like recorded and put in the Discord. I was like, if my brain thought about like how crazy it was what I was doing, I'd be like, I cannot believe I'm hitting this many targets in a row. Like that's like what's going through my mind. But I had to like delete that thought from my mind or else it'll get in the way of like my instincts that are moving faster than that thought of like, oh my, I'm just shooting targets and going like, this is fucking crazy. I can't believe I'm doing this. And I just had to keep glowing with it. It feels like you're in the fucking Matrix. Like nothing can stop you. Like full on seeing through the veil and like only seeing the targets. It's nuts. It's nuts. But like I can do it now. And it's like such a crazy experience. This is what these games are good at. I think like Valorant, League of Legends too is good at this too, where it's like you do something and you're just amazed by what you just did because you didn't think you could do that a short while ago. But yeah, it's cool because I've gotten better at like taking clips and stuff. So I have a nice little, I'm trying to work on a little highlight reel of Valorant stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, you gonna use some dubstep?
You know, maybe. Maybe
the
I'll
bodies hit the floor?
Try to be a little subversive with it.
Ooh.
Some city K-pop.
K-pop.
Yeah. Maybe K-pop. Maybe.
Roy, are you playing Magic Online?
I played a lot of Magic Arena, like
a Magic Arena.
Last year. Played a lot last year, and then I kind of fell off.
Now that you're there, you're like
I should get back into it. Honestly, I get a bunch of free crystals or gems or whatever the currency is.
Gems. Josh, are you still playing a lot of Runeterra?
I'm not playing a lot, but I'm watching streams every day. YouTube videos.
I don't know if there was like digital card game discourse to be had, but
there's always digital like card game discourse to be had, my friend. That's a thing that happens with all games that update on a regular basis that have to switch up some of the mechanics, that have to make shifts and try to adjust for new realities and competition. It's always just going to be the way things are, and it's going to piss people off. People hate change, but I'm sure.
I also still maintain that there's like a tyranny of the meta that happens. It's like it's the culture right now of online games where people assume that there's like one way to play through a set. There's like one path where it's like this is the way to do it, and then don't open themselves up to other opportunities in part because a new set's going to come.
But
in Runeterra or Hearthstone,
okay,
or
but
Magic.
What,
every 3 months.
we rarely get a lens through which to see the opposite side of that. But I would argue that the League of Legends update is the opposite, where it's like there is no real meta because everything is like too strong.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much shit that feels just way OP. And it's cool because it's like it feels like you could kind of do anything and it'll work and you can just like do absolutely ludicrous things that you should not be able to do in that game. But
I feel like that's where you want to be in a game. It's like if you can do something OP and have fun,
you should play Dota. You should play Dota.
You're like,
this is the Dota lover's perspective. But
everything is OP. It's wonderful.
Everything is just crazy OP, but in a different way. To an extent, that's kind of like Magic's thing too, I guess. Like there's a lot of stuff in that game that's just like, I can't believe you can do this. Like I can't, there's like a hexproof is like, why is this a thing? Like, how is this a mechanic in this game?
Mechanic, you can't do anything.
Yeah, you can't do anything to my cards. To this.
Mechanic, fuck you.
Take one turn, then get fucked at the end of your draw step.
Yeah. Yeah, but it goes both ways, I guess. And it depends on what kind of player you are that determines whether or not like you're going to jibe with the changes that are coming to you. But it is definitely a change of pace in the League of Legends world for the changes to be like an extreme buff that people don't know how to deal with because everything is so damn strong. It's like everyone else is so strong, including you, that you feel weak. It's a weird paradox in the game right now. And I still can't tell how I feel about it, but I am having fun experimenting with new stuff.
Yeah. It's definitely fun to, I've been playing a lot too. And being surprised by stuff, is both like frustrating and like an exciting experience in League. Like getting one shot like, by a support bard and you're like, oh, okay.
Didn't I just have all my health? what? Like karma will just cue me and just I'm dead.
I guess I'm dead now is what I've been saying a lot.
Yeah. I guess that kills me.
I guess that kills me now. Okay.
Yeah. All right, Kyle. It seemed like you were really excited to talk about something earlier in the episode.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I am pleased to present to you 2020's Game of the Year top contender, Paper Mario and the Origami King.
Mm.
God damn, this game is fucking great. And no one is talking about it, and I don't know why. I think it's because there's a lot of Paper Mario haters out there. And listen, I hear you. The last good one was Thousand Year Door on GameCube. That came out in like 2007. Super Paper Mario sucked. Sticker Star sucked. There was some other one that I don't even remember, also sucked. But Origami King is so good. And have either of you played Paper Mario before?
I've never played a Paper Mario game.
You guys don't look like you love life enough to play Paper Mario.
Okay, Kyle. Like, let's get real here with, let's get real.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Josh, get real right now.
Nintendo does not market Paper Mario. A. B. Paper Mario does not jive with, like, what Nintendo, like, what Mario games are, what I play Mario games for, which is just, like, zany platforming and, like, action stuff. Like, anything outside of that world.
Josh,
barring Josh. Say Super or Mario Kart is like okay, like I assume it'll be pretty good because it's Mario, but it's not like the top of its class as if it was like another game of that genre that was like better. You know what I'm saying?
What if I told you that in Paper Mario and the Origami King, Nintendo took all of the best parts of Breath of the Wild and Super Mario Odyssey and put it in this game. And also added back Zelda-esque dungeons from things like Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask.
Do I have your attention? I thought Paper Mario was an RPG. Am I totally wrong?
Yeah.
It is?
No, you're kind of right. So this is the crazy shit. So I like, one of my favorite games of all time is Paper Mario and the Thousand Year Door. I loved it so much. It was my science fair project in 11th grade or 7th grade. I literally did like, I did like a very classic nerd science fair project, which was like, do video games increase or decrease your vision? I just used it as an excuse to play Thousand Year Door for like 60 hours after I had beat it. I started the project after I beat the game. So I had to just do all the side shit for like 50 or 60 hours. Anyways, that game is great. And I have been like wanting a new, everyone who loves that game has been wanting a new Paper Mario
The funny thing is that Kyle found out that it does make your eyesight worse. He needed to get glasses. Okay, go on.
Actually, I fucked the test up because I just kept reading the same chart and ended up memorizing the chart, which I didn't realize I had memorized it until later on. And I was like, oh, wait a second. My eyesight's not getting better. I just can recall the charts and letters.
I'm just a cheater. I don't have better eyesight.
EFPTOZH something. Yeah.
Holding up his hand.
Yeah, like but yeah, so Thousand Year Door is a great game. A Thousand Year Door is like what you would expect Paper Mario to be. So it's like, it's roughly like, I mean on this podcast I'm on record as really loving like Pikuniku, and a lot of the humor that Pikuniku is using, and honestly like a lot of like sort of like modern indie game humor that's not like super online but is like pretty online, is really borrowing from Paper Mario's humor, which has been like, the writing in those games has always been amazing, and the humor has always been really, really great, and they've always had like really good heart. And it's like, I think of a lot of Nintendo games are also like the most written, like there's the most actual like writing that Nintendo is just sort of flexing on for these games. That to say, Thousand Year Door is like, it's structured like sort of an RPG. There's there's like 6 or 7 zones. The game, Paper Mario games, are sort of roughly open world. So you go into like a zone and you sort of do a thing in a place, and then you like get the thing and then you do that 6 more times. But all the zones always have like a lot of character. They use it as a way to like flesh out the universe of Mario in really surprising ways. Like, spoilers for Thousand Year Door, but like Thousand Year Door ends with you fighting this like 1,000-year-old demon that's sealed under this tower. It's like not really related to Bowser at all. And so they're just like, it was just really good. And it's like very much an RPG, right? It's like, so like you, there's people in a line left and right. You're attacking turn-based style more or less. And that was fine. And everyone wanted like another one of those. They're like, we love this thing. Let's just give us another one. And then Nintendo hasn't for the longest time. And then they essentially stealth announced Origami King this year. And it looked like Thousand Year Door. And everyone fucking lost their shit, including me. I was like, this looks amazing. I don't even know what's going on. And so I started playing it this week. And it is like everything Thousand Year Door was and more. So like, if you take the sort of the format of like Paper Mario, which is like this roughly RPG story-based thing, but then you actually expand it to start incorporating stuff from like Breath of the Wild. So like they have, especially stuff like the Korok seeds, like they have this system of like finding toads around everywhere that is like very, very Breath of the Wild-esque. But then on with like the sort of mix of like Mario Odyssey, where like everything is interactable. So in like other Paper Mario games, it's sort of like a static. I mean, it's like if you're moving around in an old Final Fantasy game, you're sort of just moving between stuff. But Nintendo's always really been, even in like some of the worst Paper Mario games, Nintendo has been really creative with their interpretation of like Mario's paperness. Like the fact that he's paper means that he can be sideways and go between cracks, or he can be folded, or other people can be folded, or he could turn into a paper airplane, or like XYZ, you know, ABC, whatever. And so they like basically they use that to hide toads everywhere. Sometimes they'll be rolled up. Sometimes there'll be signs. Sometimes there'll be like critters around. There's also just like hidden stuff everywhere that you can just find them. But then also they take the actual structure of the game and actually make the game more focused around like actual like dungeons that are very, very like old school Legend of Zelda style. So you're not just like fighting, you're moving around in these levels. You're like jumping and avoiding flames. You're doing like block puzzles. You're like, you are still fighting and like some RPG stuff, but even like the RPG system is like this fucking crazy, like board game style thing where you're, this is gonna be hard to explain. I know I'm just rambling right now, but basically it's like, imagine that you've got like five, I guess it's like five concentric rings. And then the rings themselves are subdivided into like five sections. So you can imagine there's like ring, 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 ring. And then each, there's like, it's almost like you sliced a pizza. But then in the middle is Mario.
Like a dartboard.
And all your attacks hit certain rings. So it either hits straight in front of you or it hits like the first two rings of the, or the first two spaces of the first two rows. And then at the start of a battle, the rings shuffle around. So you have to basically like turn these rings to line up people and then you attack them with these powers. And then as you, it's a video game. So like different attacks have different sort of hit radiuses and like all this crazy shit. And it's like super fun and like totally crazy. And I had no idea this was in there and it's amazing. And then the boss battles are totally different where they invert the relationship and the bosses are on the inside of the ring. And you're like, have, do you have to like move the rings around the outside to like move Mario close? And it's just like, it's insane.
It's
straight up like Breath of the Wilded Paper Mario, and it is so good. And like the writing is still
amazing.
Where's
the Breath of the Wild thing coming from?
Because I think there's a way to like look at, you know, like Wind Waker or like Twilight Princess, and even like they're very much in a lineage of the previous games. They're like roughly based around dungeons. They're, you know, whatever. Breath of the Wild is like a reinterpretation of the formula of Mario. Oh, sorry, the formula of Zelda. And I think similar a little bit to like Mario Odyssey, where it's like, I think it really picks up from like the Mario 64 legacy more than like Galaxy. But they basically looked at Paper Mario and they're like, this is a really interesting opportunity for us to take some of these new ways of thinking about how we like work with pre-existing IP and like change it and make it more. And it's just like, they fucking knock it out of the park. And I don't even know how to like describe more about like how amazing this game is, but it's just like at every moment it's like funny, it's surprising, it's interesting.
All right,
it's
I'll like, get it's even it. Like I'll a little get difficult. It.
Just get it. Just I'll get
download
it. I'm telling
it.
You. And it's not even like you don't even have to like Paper Mario to like dig it. There's not like a history there that you're like not going to be keyed in on. It's just it's blowing. It's like I'm excited because it's blowing my mind because. It's everything I wished it was. And that's obviously great as a lifelong gamer. You like it when that happens, which we're going to talk about Cyberpunk later. Don't forget, talk about that. But like, it's the sort of thing that like, it's just, they nail it like so well that it just feels like just, it just feels so good to play. It feels good. It feels compelling. Like it's new and it's interesting. Like the biggest thing I really love about Paper Mario that games like Piku Niku pick up on And a short hike, honestly, to a little bit, is that like Paper Mario was always really good at doing these sort of like one-off things and making those things feel special. So versus something like, and we shit on God of War a lot, so I'll shit on it a little bit more. It's not like you're just hitting stuff with an axe for 40 hours or whatever. And I know God of War is more than that. But Paper Mario basically, like, because I think in part that they have like the power of Nintendo, it's like this 30 or 40 hour string of like all unique things. So like there are battles and you will battle, but like moment to moment in the game, there are all these like little set pieces that are their own interesting things that aren't really related to what came before or after it.
Yeah, yeah.
So you'll be doing all these things and all of a sudden you're like, I've been playing this game for 6 hours and it feels like I'm still doing new stuff despite the fact that like, you know, I'm in the same area or whatever.
Yeah.
And it like constantly like subverts itself. And like, it's just, guys, it's good.
Okay.
It's real good.
All right. You got me. All right. We're going to play the game.
That's all I wanted, Josh. I'm excited for you to play it. Have a open heart
for the record.
For joy.
the past few Mario games have been like that, you know?
Mario games, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I definitely, this feels very much like it came from the same realm. I would even say, I don't know if it's the same, it's Intelligent Systems, which didn't do Odyssey, but a lot of the sort of like, even some of the music, there's like some big band stuff, but a lot of the sort of the feel of Odyssey, you can sort of feel it in this game. And it's been like, it's just seriously like, I can't emphasize to you how much at like pretty regular intervals, I'm like, what? That's fucking hilarious. Or like, what? That's what the hell? What are they doing here? Like just crazy shit, man. So if you like Paper Mario and you're a Thousand Year Door fan like I am, this is it. This is what you're looking for. Unquestioned, one of my best top games of 2020. Play that shit. You guys want to talk about Cyberpunk?
Let's take a break. This is our first time taking a break in maybe a
long
year.
Time. We're right at the hour mark. Let's take a break.
Yes, quick break. Welcome back to Bad End Podcast. Josh Calixto here with Kyle Cookstell and Roy Graham, some gaming geniuses. We got, funny story, we came home a couple days ago and on our collective porches was sitting a brand new, fresh, pristine copy of Cyberpunk 2077, the latest from CD Projekt Red, the illustrious creators of The Witcher 1, The Witcher 2, mm-hmm. The Witcher 3, mm-hmm. The Witcher 3 Hearts of Stone, The Witcher mm-hmm. 3 Blood and Wine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know about y'all. I think the first thing we got to talk about with this game is the hype. Because
it's been so much hype.
As we know, the hype precedes the game. And when I got this, I nearly, you know, jumped out the window in joy. I've been looking forward to this thing for such a long time.
I nearly left my gas stove on in joy in my home.
Yeah. If I had left the window open and then the gas stove on, they would have canceled each other out. And then my joy would have worked out. But
you guys got your copy on the porch. I didn't tell you that when my copy was delivered, I must have been part of some like viral marketing campaign. I got one of those like ring alarms. I saw Keanu actually walk up to my door, drop it off, and then run away. So himself? I ran down there to like be like, hey. And like it was just there. And I was like, he was on to the next. It's like Santa Claus, basically. But I was just surprised that they'd send Keanu to my house to drop off my copy.
It's the personal touch.
It was just a cool thing. It's just a cool thing to talk about up front. I just want to say that it was awesome. Thank you, CD Projekt Red.
Did you know you were part of like a marketing, like internal video that they do of like themselves, like punking video game journalists? It's just like Keanu like shitting on your front porch going like, fuck video game journalists, bro. CD Projekt Red forever, baby.
Do you think the person who shot my windows in with a gun was Keanu Reeves also?
Yes, definitely. It's like part of it's like an immersive marketing campaign.
I am also part of the marketing campaign.
It's an ARG.
Sorry, Josh, the hype. Keep going. Okay. What are you talking about?
So they gave us these copies to review, us being the legendary video game podcasters / creators that we are. And so the first thing I want to cover is the hype. And I want to talk about this because the hype is the most important thing going into the game that decides whether you will like it or not, in my opinion. Look, I want to go through, what was your hype level for the game on a scale of 1 to 10? Okay. For me, 10.
Easily. Oh, wow. I know you're a tenor.
I watched all of IGN's preview videos about the game. They literally had a series of videos that was like the first 16 hours of Cyberpunk, and it's just like a guy on screen talking about like the first 16 hours. And then there was another video that was like answering your burning questions about Cyberpunk 2077. And then like the questions were like, is the driving fast? It was like stuff like that. Like stuff that it's like,
can
damn,
I kiss the girls?
When was the last time I was game? Like at a point in my life when that's the question I would ask about this game? And then there was another one, like the last of the preview videos was hilarious because it was called like the final preview, like our final preview video of Cyberpunk 20. So it's like the one to cap it all off, the grand finale of previews. And you know, it was like, just like most of the same shit rehashed.
Really fast?
I think like it was just like, yeah, they're about like normal. They're not too fast, but they're not too slow was the answer. Anyway,
we'll talk about the cars later.
What was
I was like at a one or a two, and maybe I take that back. I'm at like a three or a four. I'm excited. We talked about it on the podcast before. It's like, I'm excited because it's CD Projekt. It's, you know, before playing it, I was like, are they going to do it? Are they going to do the open world Cyberpunk game that everyone has said they're going to do and no one's really done it? So I was like, my hype is low because no one's done this before. Will they do it? I don't know.
Okay, so you're skeptical of the studio, but hyped about the potential.
Yes.
That's a 10. Because
if they do it, that's great.
That's a 10.
Okay, I'm a 10.
He's a 10.
I didn't even know I was a 10.
Yeah.
All right.
Roy?
Josh, I'm happy to say I'm also at a 10 in preparation of Cyberpunk. I was rereading a copy of Neuromancer by William Gibson. And every time they wrote the main character's name, which is Case, I would cross it out and I would write in Cyberpunk because of how excited I was.
Oh, man. Can you sign that and send it to me? I feel like that's going to be worth something someday.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
So we're all tense here then. I didn't even realize how hyped we were for this
game.
Very
hyped.
The first thing you got to talk about after hype is story. So for those not in the know, who wants to explain what Cyberpunk is about?
I'm going to do my best job here because before playing, CD Projekt has been very withholding of like actual information about this game, despite IGN's pre-review parade of videos. Like they haven't said shit. Like they put out the first honest to God, like, gameplay trailer like 3 weeks ago. We're all aware of this, right? Like they've been so withholding of so much stuff that like I didn't even know it was going to be in there. But what they also did in that video was they talked about the story a little bit. So I'm going to tell you about the story of Cyberpunk, and it's going to sound fake, but it's not because I played the game. So I'll talk about the first 5 hours, and I'll let Roy or Josh pick it up after that. So the premise of Cyberpunk, for all of you who don't know, is fucking insane. It's that Keanu is embedded inside of your head and appears to you as a hologram to guide you on your like hacker quest in Night City, which is like, it's the Cyberpunk city. And so he's like doing you on this stuff. And then what they don't tell you about in the trailer. So that's crazy. Keanu's with you way more than you're expecting to. There's also some other people that we'll talk about a little later that appear also surprising. But like it starts out where, you know, he takes you on this quest through Night City. You're like, I don't know what's going on. You know, it's very kind of like standard sci-fi fare. And then like you learn about like the big corporation, and there's all, you know, well, there's a few, but there's one main one specifically that you find out is run by like this criminal gang. But then like you actually find out too that you've got some like weird tie to the top. So you become like the best guy or girl or non-binary person, because CD Projekt Red was very progressive with their character creator this time, that you've got to go take them down and you're sort of the best person to do it. So you start on, you're basically going on this mission to take down this like really big corporation, but then some shit happens that I don't want to steal the mic for too long. I don't know if either of you want to pick it up because it's pretty crazy.
I mean, I was very impressed at the sort of the where they were drawing their inspiration as writers from. You know, you would expect the classics, the heavy hitters of like cyberpunk pop culture to be referenced, to make an appearance here.
But Ernest Cline.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But you know, I really wasn't expecting to go all the way back to Donna Haraway. You know, the Cyborg Manifesto. It shows up a whole lot in the game.
Haraway Corporation is one of the main corporations.
Yeah, Donna Haraway is in the game. I was really excited to get into a sniper battle with Donna Haraway.
That was crazy. It felt honestly like something like the apoapsis of a lot of her, what she was saying, the Cyber Manifesto as well. Like it, in a way, it sort of completes what she talked about. Right,
in the same way that, you know, the cyborg has no real origin story in the Western sense, but is also the you know, the awful apocalyptic telos of the West's escalating domination of abstract individualization. Yeah. So too is Cyberpunk a game in which you shoot Donna Haraway with a sniper rifle.
So everyone who said that they were scared that the writing in this game wouldn't be as good as The Witcher 3, rest assured, there is some crazy stuff. It just they really go there, I think, is what we're trying to say.
Yeah. My favorite character was Gabriel Santiago. He's a hacker. There's a lot of hackers in this game. We can go into some of the hacking stuff now.
Let's do it.
So hacking comes into this game in a few ways, first of which is you can hack through buildings. So you can play your own way. The promise of RPG gaming come to life. If you want to shoot your way through a building, you can do that. But you can also hack your way through a building. By like making the cameras look the other way, you can like do little robots, control little robots and tap the guards on the shoulders and sneak past them. You can
control people's like AR displays on their faces.
Yeah.
You can like have them turn their heads.
And then toward the end game, you're able to take control of people because everybody has bio chips in their brains. So you could control them from afar from the console in your hand once you get the upgrades.
That's the crazy twist that I was going to bring up earlier, is that it switches where instead of Keanu basically being in your mind, you make it so that you're in everyone else's mind. So like, I think Roy was really smart to bring up the Cyborg Manifesto by Donna Haraway, because in like the late game of Cyberpunk, you're basically anybody. So it doesn't really matter. Yeah,
identity really dissolves in the late stage of Cyberpunk. Identity dissolves.
The question of, like, they make it seem like it's about being like a person or a machine, but it's really about what does it mean to be nothing and everything.
Right.
So you're both a nobody. You know, your origin story is that you're a no one, but at the same time, your status as a nobody is elevated because of what we're sort of finding out as you're playing through and finding your ties to this big corporation. But at the end, it's both the birth and death of the self, because you do become everyone. So like, it's sort of like what happens in Watch Dogs, but instead of Keanu being in your mind, you're in everyone else's mind. So you can basically, they actually have it where I think it's like 30 hours in, you basically get to create like five other characters with a character creator. And then it's almost like GTA 5. You can control any of them specifically, but then if you occupy someone else, you can also change their appearance. So you basically, it's not just like, it makes it look like it's just one character, but you sort of move around to play as other people, which was like, that sort of blew my mind. That would have like, you know, I said I was a 3 or 4 at the start. We found out I was a 10 later, but if I knew that at the start, instant 10, instant 10 hype.
It's like Primer, the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is like Primer.
It's like Primer mixed with like, what was that movie with Oscar Isaac?
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yeah.
Ex Machina, yeah. It's like Primer mixed with Ex Machina mixed with the Matrix. Matrix 1, obviously, not 2 or 3.
Right.
Yeah.
Also some Mad Max when you're not inside a Night City, like the desert area, very Mad Max.
Don't forget Blade Runner 2049.
Big, big influence for sure. Big influence.
I mean, let's talk about, I mean, the music. I mean, if we're talking about cyberpunk is, it's synths. But like, so that's there, everyone, that one, that stuff's there. But like, there's some other crazy tracks that hit at different points in this that are very surprising. I'll go ahead and say the first one, fucking Old Town Road. When that shit hits in that mission, fucking lost my shit. I lost my shit, especially because you start outside like around Night City and it's before you get your car. So you have to ride a horse. And then so like in the music video, like it's like you and like other like cyberpunks running around on horses and they start playing. You hear, yeah, I'm going to take. I lost my shit.
The drum kit comes in and it shows like in GTA, the song that's currently playing and it's Old Town Road prod period Marshmallow. And listening to the Marshmallow remix.
It's the remix.
Yeah, it's the fucking Marshmallow remix.
I didn't even realize it was the remix.
Featuring Deadmau5. Deadmau5.
Mastered by David Guetta.
Mastered by track two.
Here's one thing I'll say about the music. I was surprised to see so much Frank Sinatra. It's a weird amount, I thought.
I think the piano bars or something like the... Nothing says like seedy underground cyberpunk bar though, like Frank Sinatra.
That's a great point.
I mean, who else would you pick for that? Grimes?
No, Joanna Newsom.
Ooh,
Joanna Newsom would have been a good pick.
That would be like the cool Villeneuve. How do you pronounce his name? Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, Denis Villeneuve.
That would be like what he like. You walk in and Joanna Newsom's like playing on a harp.
I would lose my mind if that happened in Cyberpunk 2077. If Joanna Newsom handed you a pistol and then played the harp while you killed everyone in the bar.
It's a fucking missed opportunity if I've ever seen.
Hey, I'm right here, CD Projekt Red. I am open. My DMs are open.
Or
I just remember you're thinking about this like slow music.
Twigs.
The elevators. If we're gonna talk about problems, we gotta talk about the elevators. It's so clear they're hiding all the loading scenes in the game in the elevators. And you ride so many because it's Night City, or should I say Night City? And they're giant buildings, right? But like CD Projekt Red isn't so crazy that they're gonna model every floor of these buildings. But they told us they were going to do the whole city, but we know they weren't going to do it. So what that means is as a player, you waste so much of your playtime just staying in elevators. Like you start on the first floor, the first two or three floors are probably spec'd out, but then you get on an elevator to go to like the next floors. And it's like a 5 or 10 minute load time to get to like, floor 20 or 30 or whatever. And there's like a sky bridge there. So you can like walk across and stuff and like get a real good look at the city. But it just sucks because then you don't have to leave. You could try to jump out the window or you could hack the window too. Like Joshua said, you could hack the window so the window will go up, but you've got to like get back on this elevator to go down. So that pissed me off. I feel like so much of this game was just like up and down elevators the whole time. I wish I could just fast travel or something, but I don't know. That's the
worst part. Is the load times. And you got to bring them up because you got to talk about the bad. But I want to say that the game really, it did a great job with the story because I think that this game was surprised me in that it felt very much like an RPG. I think about the scene where you do this drug trip. There's a drug trip sequence because Night City is a city where there's a seedy underbelly and you see it up close and personal and you go through a drug trip and it goes into like a, it changes the game like in Skyrim, like when you go into the world, the painted world, it does that type of, was that Oblivion or was that Skyrim?
I think it was or going both. Into Oblivion.
Maybe Dark Oblivion.
Souls. Yeah, the painted worlds in Dark Souls.
Though. Not the paint. You go into the painting, the world of the painting, not the fucking painted world. painted Dark world, Dark Souls does something similar where you're like it's in a painting. Called
the painted world in Dark Souls.
Okay, well, that's what I was thinking.
About Shigorath.
Okay, yeah. And yeah, it becomes Lovecraftian sort of, and you're imagining stuff, you're hallucinating.
You see giant monsters like in the city. Yeah,
that's one of the more memorable scenes, the drug trip scene, the romance scene. I loved romancing the characters. That was really the number one thing in the game to me, was choosing what person I wanted to fuck was a good part of the game.
And it's anyone too.
Right.
There's not just anyone, like anyone in the city. Yeah.
Right.
Anyone in the city. Yeah. You can sort of tell that they're using like the same archetypes for like language and stuff. But once you sort of lock on to your person,
that's the question that I'm sure our listeners want to know, was who can't you fuck? And the answer is nobody. You can fuck everyone.
As long as they're cool with it is an important.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You have to,
if they agree. If they say yes, you have to ask for
the whole city.
A lot of horny bastards in CD Projekt Red. I have yet to be turned down.
Yeah, everyone's horny.
Everyone's down. It's a cyberpunk future. I bet there's an achievement for romancing every single person in the city.
I got the sex chip that boosts your libido rating, so I can fuck more people.
I didn't do that quest.
Yeah.
I didn't do that quest.
That's the best one. It's like a hidden upgrade.
That's cool. I did the eunuch mod.
So you're going on the
Did that make you shoot straighter?
The seating.
No, it means my character's dick does not work.
Oh, at all.
Yeah.
But you can get a cyber
dick. He's a bard.
If you go to the mod shop, you can like basically there's like, so the cool thing this game does is that you can actually unlock with mods, things to do in the character creator as well. So like, you know, you could have got the second dick option, but playthrough number two.
I got to leave something for the next run.
What about, let's talk about weapons. I mean, that's like, you can hack, obviously you can shoot. Everyone knows that, but there is some like legitimately strange weapons here. My favorite is, you can basically sneak up behind people and put things in the backs of their heads and then remotely detonate their head. That's my preferred way to play. Because it allows me to like be both stealthy and totally disgustingly violent. And because it also means that
you can have it both ways.
It's hard in two ways.
You can play your way.
You can have it both ways. But also, Josh, you know what I mean? It's like the cool part about doing that style is that you have to not only get to the person, you have to then sneak out of the room because obviously there's a blast radius of the explosion. Yeah. So I've got to make sure that I'm not near the radius.
The skull so shrapnel, sort of like, the way that it turns all the bone shards into shrapnel that kills everyone around.
It'll fuck you up. Yeah. I think the damage is too high.
It's a little busted. Yeah.
It's all the logic of stealth mixed with the carnage of shooting that cancels it out, which is loud, lethal. But you get to have the satisfaction of both.
You want that pop.
You want the pop. It's very satisfying. And the bomb has a sound chip mounted to it so that when the explosion occurs, you can actually hear the explosion, which is a great, nice little touch that I thought that they did. I'm going to say, combat not as great as I wanted it to be in this game. It's like The Witcher, where you know you're not here for the combat, you're here for the sex, you're here for the story, you're here for the romance stuff,
the sex,
you're here for the boobs, you're here to
the celebrity appearances
for the decisions that you have to make,
the deep sort of questions about identity in a future so thoroughly dominated by a feudal capitalistic sort of system.
And they get into that because you have to buy sex sometimes too. So it's right there.
Yeah, it's right there. Really. Yeah. Josh, what's your favorite weapon though?
Mine is the katana. that is electric.
You like Ghost Runner too, so that makes
it's
sense.
It's electric. It's explosive. It teleports you with a blink ability. It casts, it inscribes runic engravings onto human flesh when you chop them in half with it, just for the style. Yeah. And also puts Japanese letters and characters onto the bodies when you chop them in half, because it's cool.
Well, if you crit too, it like pops up like behind the character, like just really big Japanese characters. So it looks
right.
Really cool.
It's called the sakura, the cherry blossom. This cherry blossom
sword. I'm not gonna say I'm surprised that's your favorite weapon, honestly.
Neither am I. Big katana guy.
The man likes what he likes.
Loves swords. But yeah, wasn't into it for that stuff. I was more into it for the scenery and the bodies of the characters. That being said, I thought that this game did not do a great job of handling, because we gotta mention, as game reviewers in 2020, didn't do a great job handling some of the more sensitive issues.
Oh, can I say my favorite weapon before we talk about the
problematic? we gotta cover the good stuff first before we get into that.
I liked the mimetic speech that you could get.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, how you could get you unlocked the sort of like sleeper activation code phrase that you could say to people that would make them their eyes roll back into their head and they'd go into a sort of berserker rage.
Mm.
That was my favorite weapon.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. I think the best part is that like the sort of the skill progression for the suggestive speech. I went up the tree where it makes you better at romancing people, but like the fact you can also use it to blow people
up.
Yeah.
I really went full on the total body detonation via speech.
Well, because if you have the eunuch perk, that other branch just like grays out. Yeah, you can't actually.
That is correct.
So that's so cool. Yeah. That was like, there's like some weird, we can talk about the problematic stuff, but I think we really got to focus on some of the gameplay just a little bit longer, just because
I'm okay to move on if you guys want. I wanted to talk about my favorite weapon. That's all.
What was your code? What was your code phrase?
Oh, I'm not going to say that over the call, Josh.
Over Discord.
We'll type it in. Just type it in Discord.
Okay. I'll type it in. Oh. You get that?
I'll be right back.
I see why you wouldn't want to say that.
Be right back. Okay.
I think we should do our diligence, like Josh is saying. Talk about what some of like the rough stuff with this game.
Yeah.
You know?
Just to mention it, to say that we did.
High speed driving.
High speed.
What the fuck?
Intoxicated driving. You are able to drive very fast while drunk in this game.
My God. You can just run red lights. No one cares.
I thought it was really messed up that you could have premarital sex in this game.
That's fucked up. That's real fucked
the
up.
The fact that you could turn your back on our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ by, you know, copulating with someone before you've taken your sacred vows is just disturbing to me. And
well, they do have, I don't know if you found it. It's like, it's sort of at a smaller part of Night City, but there is a chapel that you can take your, it's like the fucking Las Vegas
what?
Chapel. You didn't see this? Yeah, dude.
Oh,
so
my
if you
God,
have your romance
how did
person,
I miss this?
Well, it's sort of hard to find, but like if you basically you can like put your romance partner, whoever in the car, and you can drive there and you can have like a little marriage ceremony. Like, I don't know, like they did in Skyrim, right? You can like marry people. It's sort of the same thing, but it's like way chintzier because it's cyberpunk. So you could, but I'm with you. I wish they would have locked
I
off.
I will
the sex
be using this feature
before
to fuck yeah. people from now on, because the fact that I couldn't like get a marriage bone and then annul it and then start over was really disturbing to me.
Yeah.
I felt like I was missing some steps in there, you know?
Well, you can just keep marrying people. You don't have to annul it. You can just keep marrying new romance options.
You could do
in the chapel.
Like a polygamy thing?
Yeah, yeah, it's Night City, dude. Whatever, anything goes, you know? Night City. But I think, yeah, flagrant disregard for traffic signals. I think, like, also, it's just dirty. I
don't like dirty. Very problematic. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of
it's fucked a lot up. Of like, crime. I think it just, it to me, it feels like a moral issue that they would show a city so dirty. I'm just saying, I'm like, I don't care. I'm like an older person. I think you have kids playing this game. It's just like, you don't want to give them that model when they're that young. You don't want them to see that and be like, this is what it's okay for a city to be like.
I was upset. It upset me when they would put the mechanical devices and things inside of their bodies. That's, you know, it made me wonder, like, man, how human are these people anymore? If their arms a robot arm, are they still a person?
This is why I don't take vaccines.
Same.
Even to really like to show it to show that is like.
I thought it was really messed up how they used the likeness of Keanu Reeves in the game. It's.
I don't think he consented to that. I think he's in a lawsuit.
It's like really disturbing that we're losing our humanity via digital representation in CD Projekt Red games. This is the same problem I had with Death Stranding, with Guillermo del Toro and what they did to him, Norman Reedus, and how they made him take shits in front of the camera. It was really messed up. And Keanu Reeves is out here. The guy. He's doing his best, but he's getting older. He's not getting any younger.
Did you read that blog post that he wrote on his blog, Keanu?
No.
He was talking about how the cyberpunk manifestation has been appearing in his screens and like on his TV and his computer.
Didn't they bug him?
It's been saying, I am you now, Keanu. Your life will be my life.
These are the consequences. This is what happens when you try to play God. And I knew it was going to happen. And I think it's fucked up that they made Keanu their guinea pig.
Yeah, I'm scared for Keanu.
Well, I mean, you know that it's funny because recently, like in the past, I guess when it happened, it was like a few months ago, they actually released what used to be in Keanu's place and it got into the wild. So I don't know if you saw the viral marketing move by Cyberpunk when they showed Robert Kardashian's hologram just like on stage. Like, I know they said that Kanye did it for Kim, but like that was what was in the game before and they took it out and put Keanu in. So it just sort of shows you what happens to those people. So I think that we should, you know, just be aware of that. Like, know that Keanu is trapped inside of this game. I haven't seen him. I saw him when he dropped off the game, but ever since playing it, I haven't seen him. So I think he's in there. As the story unfolds, you start to sort of hear a little bit more about that. You start to hear Kanye. He'll do like, you know, like the little audio log will pop up and he'll start talking to you. He'll say like, hey, Kyle, once you're done having sex with this person, like come to this tower. I want to tell you something. And it's like, it's hard to tell. Sometimes it's hard to tell like what's reality and what's the game.
Right, yeah. I find it pretty upsetting when he started saying, like, Kyle, please help me. I'm trapped. Please get me out. Oh God, they put me in this game and I can't feel anymore. It hurts so much. That was,
it's awesome.
It's I mean, real 10 cool. 10. Yeah. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. But like, I'm freaked out. I don't know what to expect. Really. I'm like, I'm still playing it cause I want 100% it. I'm trying to go for that romance everyone achievement. I know it's there. It's not on the list, but I'm sure it's there. It's just like a secret achievement. But
flawed masterpiece.
I mean, yeah, that's really what we're getting at here. Flawed masterpiece.
Crafting.
I will say
there's a lot of crafting in this game too.
Oh yeah, fuck. We can talk about crafting.
Like Red, this game actually reminds me a lot of Red Dead Redemption 2, in that it's very committed to making its point and like creating a world that's more concerned with that than like action sequences. And crafting is a big part of that. You know, you spend a lot of your time searching through drawers for like coins and like the stuff that you use to create new biochips, silicone. you collect screws and nuts and bolts. You collect creds. Gear. Creds is the money currency that you use in the world. You collect food, gear, and you can put together new upgrades for your character. So you spend a lot of time doing that. You got to go to an artificer to create new bio mods to upgrade one of your trees. What tree did you all take? I took the charm libido tree. I took running fast and stamina tree. I took the hardening tree. I took the like lot of blood in my system tree and fluids. And then the last tree, because you can only have a max of like 8 trees or something like that. The last tree I took was fine motor skills and finger skills and tongue skills tree.
For hacking.
For hacking, because you got to be able to change your fingerprints for the sake of hacking in this game.
I went on the drug tracks.
Oh, okay.
Did you guys experience with the drug? There's the drug crafting system.
I didn't really mess with the drugs that much.
Dude, the drug crafting system is really dope, especially because there's narrative impact based on what drugs you're crafting. So like Josh talking about the psychedelic sequence, and it's really cool. You can start manufacturing your own psychedelics and basically like...
stems.
The game... Yeah. Like, I think like I was really big into crafting. Hush was my big drug that I was crafting. and then Slick is sort of like the lower tier stuff, but I was definitely like, yeah, I spent most of my time in the drug crafting tree. I didn't see the artificer that much, so I went to the apothecary frequently.
I did the corp route. I wasn't really on the street level, so a lot of my I took the like the HR upgrade.
Did you work your way up?
Yeah.
Human revolution.
Yes, yeah, the human revolution. I got the chip that makes your water cooler conversation better.
Did you upgrade your water cooler?
I dumped it all in the water cooler. That water cooler is let me tell you, Kyle.
It's like the fucking villa in like Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Whatever number that was.
It's sexy for sure.
Did you take any points in code switching?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Good stuff.
Yeah. It actually turned out to be wasted points because my character was white, so I didn't need to do that. But
okay.
I saw this from a trailer, but I didn't actually do it. So I know how like in Red Dead you can like sit and like watch movies, but I saw on the business track you can sit and watch sensitivity training lectures.
Yes. Yeah.
So did you? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you did.
I did. I actually really leveled up my racial sensitivity.
That's awesome.
I got it to like level 4 or so. So
okay, cool. Yeah. So you can effectively approach a person of a different race now in the game.
Yes, and I'm capable. My character is capable of empathizing with their lived experiences.
What? Mm. Yeah. Every time I get next to a brown person, it turns into a shootout.
It's because you didn't go through the sensitivity training, man.
Fuck! I should have gone corp.
The corp route is really. Dude. I will say it's a little soul crushing. You do.
Did you reach the glass ceiling part of the tree?
No. I told you I was playing a white character, so just went right past it.
All right. Well, fuck. I'm learning. This is. We got to put a spoiler alert on this one because this is a lot of secret mechanics behind Cyberpunk 2077
it's a deep game, a very deep game,
very deep, very cued in with our times, very exquisitely crafted, I would say. What's your favorite cyber chip that you used?
Everything tastes like peanut. It's
a good one.
That's my favorite one.
I couldn't tell but the effects of that one because it's a video game. But I liked how the voice lines, every time you ate like a burger, they were like, tastes like peanuts.
Yeah. I thought I was glad to see my character go, peanut, whenever I ate anything. It made me feel immersed.
And every time they say it, they're sort of surprised,
too. Yeah.
Like they didn't just take the chip.
they talk about it at length, like in a Tarantino script. They're like, I remember when these used to taste like burgers, but now it tastes like peanuts because I got a fucking peanut chip.
Yeah, what about you, Kyle?
Cyberpunk world we live in.
Oh, man. I like the one where it helped me crab walk really fast. So there's a way that you can basically change it so that you're, you know, most humans are bipedal, but like there's a way where basically, I mean, you ask for chip, it's chip plus an implant because it changes your spine. Basically, it allows you in the game to sort of move around on four legs really quickly. Like I said, I'm a big sneaky person too. So it was really easy for me to sort of like crab walk in to somewhere like really fast, like scurry in and then like pop that attack chip and then like detonate their head and like scurry away. So I was like a cyber spider, really. That was sort of what I was going for. And I also did that too, like, because fucking cars are too fast. Like, I don't want to support that. I don't want to support a developer doing that in their game. So I went cyber spider, basically. What about you, Josh?
I got the, I spent a lot of time at the in-game bars, and I hated how, like, a lot of the conversations were pre-canned, and I wanted some new options. So I took the masterful negging perk cyber chip, so I could choose to degrade the people that I was hitting on, and it ended up working a good amount of the time in Cyberpunk made by CD Projekt Red. So good stuff.
That's good. I mean, that's good. Like, it's good that they give you those range of social options where you can like be mean to someone or be like really mean to someone.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's a great lesson.
I want to talk about one other thing too, real quick. I don't know if we're about to wrap up this review, but like, so I think going into this game, everyone's mind is on one major thing. I mean, it's on a lot of things, but there's one thing, which is like, will there be a mini game greater than Gwent in this game? They haven't shown it. None of the trailers talk about it yet, but I am more than happy to say that, what do they fucking call it? It's called like Zap Chess. It didn't really explain it. Basically, like, you sort of sit down at a table with someone to play Zap Chess, and you plug in your head implant into the chair that you sit on. And then basically what happens is you play chess. It's sort of just like chess. You can like buy different little pieces. But if you lose a piece, you actually take damage into your head for losing a piece. So you lose the piece, but then you also take a little bit of damage. So it makes like, it's really cool because it makes every battle be about life and death.
It's also,
which I think gets it. It gets at the themes of cyberpunk.
It's got that pay to win component, which you know, reflected the sort of capitalist dystopia of the world, where if you spend enough credits, you can make your queen into a war destroyer module queen.
Yeah. And they like take up more spaces on the board.
They have ranged attacks.
Yeah, it's a lot like. It's kind of like the that game that Han Solo plays in that movie, The Star Wars, where he's playing with Chewbacca. It's sort of like that, but
it's a really good cyberpunk social commentary.
It's pretty cool. I liked it. Yeah,
Social commentary. We're kind of all playing a game of Zap Chess, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm wearing headphones right now. I don't know what happens if I lose this podcast.
Whoa, you can't, Kyle.
I don't know.
You can't lose this podcast. Final thoughts.
I feel like we're about to wrap
final
this
thoughts.
Up. I mean, I just want to say one thing. The labor aspect. That's all I want to say.
Labor.
Let's wrap it up.
Labor. And that's our review of Cyberpunk 2077. Final thoughts on the game. For me, it went in a much different direction. It's impossible to describe all the stuff that Cyberpunk has to offer because there's
much. We really tried.
We did our best, but you know, there's so many activities, from Zap Chess to romancing people to choosing between one of two dialogue options that are ultimately have the same effect on the story, but which make your character say something slightly different and makes you wonder whether they might have said something different. There's, you know, you can go on to virtual computers. You can interface with Keanu Reeves and have video calls with him back and forth. And you just kind of shoot the shit and be like, yo, what's up? And you just talk back and forth. You can drive around Night City. You can drive around Desert City. You could drive around Day City. You could drive around Cyber City. You could drive around the information superhighway. There's so many things.
Oh yeah, the internet. You can actually be in the internet. We've got to talk about that.
Yes.
That's a whole other thing.
We do. We don't have time. I'm pretty sure we don't have time.
300 hours. You can literally go into the internet. And I still have so much left to do. And that, my friends, 10 out of 10.
So good.
Anyone else? Final thoughts?
I've said everything. Everything I mean to say about this game.
I'm speechless. Yeah. 10 out of 10. So good. Graphics amazing. Gameplay is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
labor.
Instant flawed masterpiece. We're barely scratching the surface of
flawed
this game.
Masterpiece. And that's it. Yeah. That's the bad end take on Cyberpunk 2077. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning into this episode. Roy Graham, thank you for being here with us, buddy.
Thanks for having me on.
Long ass ep. And we appreciate your presence. But, you know, it's been a minute since we've had an episode this long. So thank you for...
Yeah. Why not for Cyberpunk?
Why not to hang out with our friend Roy, you know? Anyway, Roy, where can people find you? Is there anything you want to plug?
You can find me on Twitter. At Grayhame, GrayHaem. I mostly make stupid jokes about monsters. But if you're into that, hop on down.
All right. Well, Roy, thanks again for coming on the show, bud. Always good to have you again in the future.
Love you guys. Yeah.
You should rejoin us if this hasn't made you dread coming, the potential of coming on Bad End Podcast in the future. But we are Bad End Podcast. We thank everyone for listening to this show. We are part of Superculture Network, so go check them out, which also includes Bullet Points, by the way, which is a podcast and website. Go check them out at Bullet Points Monthly. And you can check us out on Twitter at Bad End Podcast on Twitter. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. We hope you will rate us and review us. And if you would like to join our wonderful Discord community, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/badend. Shouts out to all our Discord community, by the way. Y'all are the best. And quick housekeeping thing. We got some stuff in the works, so keep an eye out. We got some cool stuff coming down the pipe. Keep an eye out for that. All right. We'll see you in a few weeks. Later.
Bye.
Night City. I'm not the one to talk to you.